Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you living happily ever after? Are you in a long-term relationship? And isn't it the greatest that it's so easy? These long-term relationships, marriage, dedicated partners, it's wonderful. But how easy is it? Well, there's a book called Happily Ever After. So aren't we all happily ever after if we're in those relationships? But the book also says it's about the 39 other myths about love. I guess there's a lot to talk about. And so the author of this book, or authors of this book, Happily Ever After, are Linda and Charlie Bloom. And I know Linda's on the phone. I don't know about Charlie yet, but hi, Linda.
Hi, we're both here.
Oh, great.
I'm here too. Well, hi, Peter.
Aren't you happily ever after? Yeah, you guys
so
have been
so
together
good.
A long time.
We're happily now, but I would say that it hasn't always been smooth sailing. Back in the early years, we had some major bumps, and it looked like we maybe weren't going to make it. But we paid attention, and we've got a good work ethic, so we've created something beautiful over time.
And you actually have become professionals at this and experts at yourselves, so you can help others. So that's wonderful. I also have been in a long-term relationship. I've been married. We just had our 35th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I also counsel couples, and I do a lot of work. I'm an intuitive counselor, but I also do a lot with the human design system, which you might have heard about. And it really helps us understand how different we all are. And we sure are. And that's what's part of what's so hard about living happily ever after is that we do find ourselves in relationship with somebody that doesn't speak the same language that we speak, right?
Right. And one of the myths in the book is that nothing good can come from conflict. And I think sometimes people, they're worried about conflict, they're phobic about conflict, they want to avoid having those deep conversations that bring up a lot of fear. And our deepest needs that we fear might not get met, and old pain that gets touched. And that's when relationships get hairy and difficult. But that's where the pay dirt is in terms of understanding each other and respecting the differences. And the conflict and the complaints that we have that lead to the conflict, I think that's highly underrated. That the complaint is the entry point into what we're really committed to in our life goals, our life values, what has special meaning for us, which may be different from our partners, and we need to put that out on the table where we can examine it and get to know it and make a big space for all of it, not a cramped, tight space.
Well, I think what's needed in relationship is for people to be responsible for themselves so that they can be responsible for each other. And responsibility in terms of the commitment to the relationship, but also really being willing to do this hard work that you're talking about.
Not everybody is. Yeah, I think you're making a really good distinction here, Peter, in terms of being responsible for ourselves so that we can be responsible to each other. Otherwise, we end up feeling responsible for the other person. And as many of us have seen, that doesn't really work out all that well, since ultimately we are the ones who are going to determine how we respond to the challenges that inevitably do occur in life and in relationships. And I think the more we can support each other in being self-responsible, the more we'll each be able to be responsible to each other and for the relationship.
All right, so let's talk about who we choose, because you know you have some myths in here about choosing the right partners and is it luck or whatever, and you also talk about whether or not we should choose people who have been through difficult childhoods and have had broken families, and whether they make good partners or not. And I think that's a real important question.
You're absolutely right. And one of the myths that we try to break up early in the book is that a happy childhood is a prerequisite for a great relationship. A lot of people have bought into that, that they're somehow damaged because they got a difficult start at the beginning of their life, that they didn't have good models because their family, their parents divorced, or they stayed together and they were miserable together. And what we have found from our own personal experience and many couples that we work with over the years in our workshops and counseling practice, that the biggest factor is not about the crummy start or the wonderful start that you got. It's how fierce your commitment is to create something beautiful with your partner now. And that level of commitment can take you quite far. In fact, the poor model that you had in your family of origin can end up being your inspiration because they were powerful teachers about the things not to do, not to be dishonest, not to cheat, not to get lost in addiction, not to fight in those circular fights that go nowhere, that that everybody ends up feeling like they're losing. And so we really feel very strongly that all of that crappy stuff that could happen in the beginning of our life can actually enhance our partnership if we use it, if we use it as a learning experience. And God
bless
people who have a good start. I think it gives them a big advantage. But if you didn't get a good start, it doesn't mean you can't have a great partnership.
Right. And it really depends on the person's own inner self-love and responsibility for oneself to work on it and to be there and to know what their demons are and to rise above it, versus a lot of people who are so devastated by their childhoods and have personalities that can't overcome it, that, you know, that's really trouble. And so definitely is a question for people entering into relationship is, who is this person I'm choosing? Are they really strong enough to bring responsibility, dedication, and commitment to making this a positive relationship? Because you've also worked with many, many couples that just haven't worked out. And it's because one of the partners, not both, otherwise they wouldn't have seen you in the first place, but at least, you know, one of them doesn't want to be responsible.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we live in a culture that often reinforces the whole notion of being a victim and not being at fault or not being to blame or not being responsible and looking outside of ourselves to attribute other factors and conditions to our situation, you know, which isn't to say that there aren't legitimate justifications and reasons for having, you know, the predispositions that we have. But we get a lot of reinforcement from the world, sometimes from friends who kind of concur with us that, you know, you just can't trust women, or, you know, men are just unreliable, or, you know, those are some of the things that we try to break up in the book, some of the beliefs, because they really do impact on our willingness to take responsibility for our lives. And I love the way you keep coming back to that notion, because that is ultimately what makes the difference between those couples who have a good chance of making it and those couples who are doomed from the beginning.
Right, but there's also so much about relationship that has to do with archetypes of, you know, male and female archetypes, and in general, of course, there, you know, we're all different, but so many times women will come for help, and I'll, you know, and they'll describe their husbands, and I'll say, well, you know, you have to understand, he's being a guy. And, you know, so let's relate to him in the way that he needs to as a guy. And women, you know, have different sensibilities in general, archetypally, and you know, I'm generalizing, but in many cases, it's really understanding that we play different roles, where men have a greater idea in themselves that they are to provide and protect, and as long as they get that job done, they don't have to be as conversant as women would like to be. And so,
I think there's a lot of truth to this whole idea about coming in our gender with a certain orientation that is quite different from the other gender.
Right.
But I do believe that even though there's differences that we come in innately and then we're nurtured in certain ways and men grow up in different culture and the big boys don't cry is still, you know, a big part of the acculturation about suck up your feelings and hold them inside. But with the difference in the genders, I do believe that we're more alike than we are different. And I want people to appreciate the difference between the genders, but I always want to emphasize the similarities between the
right.
genders.
We're
because
all human.
We all want to feel loved. We want to feel loved as is. We want to feel mm-hmm. cherished and honored and respected. And everybody wants to have a relationship that works, where the trust is high, where they feel secure to be able to open up about their deepest and darkest. And, you know, when we're in a partnership, we want that person to be our close friend and to have an intimate connection with them, that they're the special one that we can reveal things to that we wouldn't tell other people. And we all really yearn for that. But sometimes people are just a little baffled and confused about how to create that context of safety, to feel that secure bond where they can feel that they can be themselves and be loved as is.
And sometimes a relationship really needs perspective. And that's why people come to you, for instance. Because I always say that after a while, just about every relationship needs a referee, just so people can hear themselves again and be sensitive to what the other person is saying. Because a lot of times, over a period of time, people, you know, don't want to hear certain things. And they need to change the conversation. And so counseling certainly can help them do that. And that's why your book is so valuable, too.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing how often we hear, when we're working with couples, one of us will say something, and it'll be one of those moments where it actually does penetrate through the armor and through the defenses that often get in the way in our relationships, and the person will have an insight, and they'll say, wow, I never realized that. And then the other person will say, I've told you that 100 times.
Right.
And I've been telling you that for 10 years.
Right, they needed a referee to tell them.
Well, it's amazing how sometimes just hearing it in another voice can,
right, exactly.
same information, but it's coming from someone that we're more open to, someone that we're not telling ourselves, oh, I know what they're going to say, I don't really need to listen. And so often, couples who are together for a while get into that mode where they really don't think they need to listen. And so it's not about saying the right things. It's about being open to receiving what's coming in.
That's so important.
And that can be a real challenge sometimes.
Yes. Listening is very difficult. Actually, my wife, who's at a conference, just called me last night and heard a talk being given by a guy who is an expert about listening and talking about how very hard it is for people to appreciate that they don't listen enough.
You know, when we think about the whole term communication, when people think of it, the first thing, the primary association they have with that is speaking. you know, I want to communicate well. I want to be articulate. I want to be concise. I want to be eloquent in the way I talk. But the listening half of communication is sometimes often more important than the speaking side.
Right.
We forget that.
Yeah. There's a show I did actually some years ago now about, it was called Intelligent Conversation. And it really had to do with not being adversarial, really trying to get a win-win out of every conversation.
And that points to the fact that there's different kinds of intelligence. And what we're promoting, you know, with that piece that you did and what we're doing with our books and our workshops is trying to enhance people's emotional intelligence, that they're in touch with their feelings, that they look inside, that they find a way to report out about what they're feeling, particularly when they're angry, to be able to contain it so that they see the fear and the fear and the pain that's underneath. Always underneath the anger, there's fear and pain. And I feel so sad when I think about that statistic that most people who get divorced never even go for one marriage counseling session. And some of those people who are going through the difficulty of divorce, maybe dragging the kids through the difficulty of divorce, maybe getting sort of bitter and jaded about relationship, going on to another relationship that's got a higher chance of breaking up even than the first one, it really saddens me that people, I think a lot of them are run by the myth that people don't change. Because we're trying to break up that myth that people don't change. There are certain essential temperaments and characterological things that do remain the same, but people do change. They learned how to communicate better,
right,
how to listen better, how to deal with conflict better, how to be more generous of spirit so that they're acknowledging each other more, affirming each other more, validating each other more, which sweetens up the relationship. So there's so much support available for couples in trouble now in the form of couples counseling, in the form of workshops. There's a bunch of things on the web, you know, classes you can take, that and all the self-help books that really have a goldmine of information in them. But I think this myth that people buy into is so limiting that people don't change. They don't avail themselves of the wealth of material that's out there.
Well, also, people have to honor the journey of the difficulties and don't see it as a defeat for the relationship, just another hurdle that helps the relationship grow and become more enriched. And, you know, it's these myths, and the myths are too idealistic. People think my wife and I have the most ideal relationship. Everybody just can't believe how wonderful we appear to everybody. And, you know, and yet when I met my wife, she was from a very proper family that didn't express emotions openly. And she said that I taught her how to fight. and she's very happy about that. And she's a relationship coach now. And so we really do bicker and have conflict. And yet we each know we're dedicated to helping the relationship, to make it successful. And
that's
so
great.
We don't mind.
And, you know,
the conflict.
I came from a family where the adults were the ones that got to fight, but the kids had to be quiet. And so I have a deep debt of gratitude, like your wife does, to my husband, who taught me to be a worthy opponent, because I was pretty repressed and conflict phobic when we got together. And I will be grateful all my days that he had me come out of hiding, because that stuff doesn't go away. It just sneaks out sideways and it damages the relationship. But we did go through a period where both of us were caught in the same myth that we have to get it off of our chest. And we had some ugly interactions. Back in the day when we were younger and vigorous, we could pull all-nighters because we would get into terrible, snarling, you know, power struggles. We learned to be more refined about the way we expressed our dissatisfaction. And there's actually been research over three decades of hard research about the more anger you express, the more angry you feel. You don't release it, really. And then you invite retaliation from the other person, which is likely to escalate it. And then you're often guilty about feeling guilty afterward about saying things you don't even really mean. So to learn the fine art of conscious combat about speaking the truth without blame and judgment and inviting retaliation, that is an art form. And when people say relationships shouldn't have to be so hard, that's one of the myths. Sometimes they're hard. When we're learning life skills, like how to deal with conflict, it can be really hard, and it can be a long months, maybe even years, to get really good at the art of conscious combat. And there are other things that need to be cultivated as well. And so if we really are convinced, and I'm totally convinced, that one of the things we're here on Earth to do is to become a more loving human being. This is the high goal of life. Well, we wouldn't expect, if we had a lofty goal to be accomplished in our profession, that there wouldn't be a learning curve. There wouldn't be, you know, certain strengths that we would have to develop. But somehow, people think just because we love each other, it's supposed to just flow out of that. No, we need skills. We need to develop our core strengths, too, our qualities that are going to make us eligible for a great relationship.
Right. And then you guys actually are mirrors for yourselves to see what you have to work on within yourself, not only in the relationship, but by yourself. And, for instance, I've been really studying shadows recently and understanding my own shadows and the shadows of others and how they run our lives. And when we can start opening up our own inner conflict and fears, then we stop being a victim of our partners and really take responsibility for ourselves as having our own work to do, and then help the other person also in the work they're doing on themselves. So it's it's interesting how in your book you talk about that every relationship not only has roots, but it also needs to have wings. And so we really do need to have our own wings as well as the wings of the relationship, and be able to self-discover as well as inter-discover.
So, one of the myths that we do not write about in the book, actually there were quite a few that we didn't include. We just, 40 was sort of an arbitrary number, but there were quite a few others, but our publisher didn't want the book to get too lengthy, so maybe we'll have a second edition of it, but second version of it. But the myth of working on the relationship, and as you're saying, it's not so much a matter of working on the relationship. It's more about working on ourselves to become more whole, to become more integrated, to re-own some of those shadowy aspects of ourselves that we have relegated to the underground, to the shadow that we're trying to conceal, because, what you withhold, what you conceal, what you deny, what you disown is going to show up, as I think you know, in the relationship.
It doesn't go away.
The intrapersonal issues will show up as interpersonal issues. Our inner issues will be manifested between us and our partner if we don't deal with them. And that's really what working on yourself is about.
Well, this book is really wonderful. I loved every bit of it, because some of it we might be aware of, and that we're not born yesterday. But it opens up the door again in ways that are very profound and helpful. And so it really is for everybody to read, no matter where they think they're at. because it climbs into everybody's lives in the ways that each of us can find parts of the book that are very important to us.
We use a lot of illustrations from our own relationship in the couples that we've worked with in our classes and our counseling practice. And so a lot of the stories that are illustrative of the myth-busting are about romantic partnership. But it has a lot of connections to parent-child relationships, family relationships on the job, and friends. And so it isn't just a book about romantic partnership. I think that we need to examine our beliefs about relationship in general, because we don't have to necessarily give up our beliefs, but so many people just allow another to put a script in their hand and are living out of that script, and they've never stopped to really deeply look into, is this serving me or not? And Charlie's favorite bumper sticker is, don't believe everything you think. It's just to shake people a little bit and to prod them a bit, to take a deeper look at these beliefs that they may have just picked up along the way and never stopped to really look more deeply into them.
Right. And so that's what's wonderful about the book Happily Ever After, is that you really do explode these myths and help us all, you know, get deeper into our relationship dramas and shed light on them and help us, you know, believe in ourselves more and believe in the relationship to have a chance because of these myths that we might have been living too strongly in. So we're getting near the end of the show, and I'm so glad. I mean, this is it's essential, the work you're doing, and I know that you're in a lot of demand everywhere for people who are seeking help, and certainly your book is a great start. And how can they find you?
Bloomwork.com is our website. And our email is on there. They can sign up for our newsletter that we send out once a month. There's a whole archive of blogs that we've posted, years worth of blogs, and connection to the four blog sites where we blog. So there's a lot of free things on our site. And when a workshop is coming up, it will be listed on our site. So if people can just remember either Charlie Bloom, Linda Bloom, or Bloomwork, they can find us.
That's wonderful. Linda and Charlie Bloom, thanks so much for being guests on Energy Stew. It's so great to talk with you, and you're doing such wonderful work.
Thank you, Peter. I enjoyed being on the show. I can tell you really get us.
I sure do, and I'm very happy to know you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.